Sort of an introductory look at Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, and the truth is that this material will probably take us over 2 weeks, but we'll get started with it now. We looked at the first piece last week, which gave Rabbi Yossi's sort of nostalgic recollection or nostalgic telling of how things used to be when there was no machloket, and it was and his ending was a little bit strange because he said there was no machloket. Because essentially everything came down to one final authority. Whatever that authority said, that was it. And the final authority was the Beit Din HaGadol. And he said, but now when you see it in the underlined piece, Mishirabu Talmidei Shammai VeHillel. Well, the reason I brought this up was two pieces. One is because of, again, this nostalgic look at how wonderful things were when there was a single authority, and now things are not. Not terrible, but they're not. And the second piece is because he points an accusatory finger at Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai for being the ones that caused this rift. And he says, Mishirabu Talmidei Shammai VeHillel Shaloshim Shu Kol Tzarkan, is in source one in the underlined piece, that they did not properly study. They didn't study diligently from their teachers. Therefore, Rabu Machloket Bisrael, now there's a lot of Machloket. V'nasei Torah K'shtei Torot. It's as if we have two Torot. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that as a result of their lack of diligence, lackadaisical attitude towards study, suddenly there was nobody recognized a single authority? Well, there's a kind of a missing piece between the description and the result. But we'll leave that. We'll come to it a little bit later. We then looked at source two, which is the famous Gemara in Eruvin. Sorry. Rabbi Abba Amar Shmuel. Now, this seems to sort of fit into what we're looking at and looking at in the first source. And for 3 years, Beit Shammai and Hillel were having a disagreement. Halal omrim halacha kamotenu, halal omrim halacha kamotenu. Each saying the halacha should follow them, meaning in all matters, not on one particular issue. So there's a 3 year debate going that halacha has to follow us, halacha has to follow, each one saying has to follow them. Right? Yatzah bat kol v'yamra. So bat kol came out and said, again, we saw this last week, Eilu va'eilu divrei Elohim chayim hen, which means these and those, the two opposite positions, are the words of the living God, v'halacha kevei tilel. So there's two obvious questions here. One is, how could two opposite positions both be God's word? And the second thing is, why is halacha kevei tilel? Now, what are our options here? Well, option one is halacha kevei tilel, that's the one's taken. The other one is halacha kevei shammai. You'd ask the same exact question. And then the third one is to say that since elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim hen, up to you. Whatever you do, you'll be doing right. Right? And if you think about it, this seems to be the yin to the yang of Rabbi Yossi. Because the minute that you say they're both divine, they're both accurate, and yet halacha follows one, you've already settled the problem that Rabbi Yossi says wasn't settled, which is there's one Torah. And that is halacha kevei tilel. So there's a lot of confusion going on in these sources. It's going to get much worse. But this is where we left off last week. I want to take a look at source 3. Because source 3 is a comment by the Ritva on this Gemara about the statement of Elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim hein. How can you say the two opposite positions are God's word? And so he quotes the Tosafot. We don't have this Tosafot in our record. Shalu Rabbanei Tzofat. How can a position that says this is mutar be God's word and that says this is asur be God's word? Right? And so he gives the following answer. Now, important to note that there's a very broad midrashic thread about Matan Torah. The reason I use that phrase is because you can find, I wouldn't say almost anything, but you could find an extremely wide range of ideas, reconstructed histories, etc., notions, descriptions in Midrash. But many of them are very isolated voices. Right? So, an example. The famous Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about Mashiach, when Mashiach is coming, and then you have the opinion of Rabbi Hillel, not Hillel, but Rabbi Hillel, a much later Chacham, who says that kvar achalu b'mei Chizkiyahu. Mashiach ain't coming, he already could have come in times of Chizkiyahu, they blew it, and that's it. And so all the other rabbis were upset about that. Rabbi Yosef Shara Le Mare, God should forgive him for saying such a thing. But there is such an opinion. But it's certainly not close to the mainstream approach in Midrashic literature, certainly not in contemporary approach. But there are mainstream approaches and sort of general things that keep popping up into Midrashim. For instance, the notion that Avraham's father was an idolater is something that shows up in countless Midrashim. There seems to be a consensus that that's who he was. Where it comes from, how we read the Pasuk in Yehoshua Chaptalad, may be the key to it. In the meantime, there is a very common Midrashic thread that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai, he actually went a little bit further up. He went into Shemayim, and he interacted with God, he interacted with Malachim, he turned around and suddenly found himself in Rabbi Kiva's Beit Midrash, that famous story, with he couldn't follow what was going on, the Gemara Menachot, tons of Midrashim, and tons of Agadot in Talmud that reflect that. And Tosfot picks up on that and says that there, and quotes a Midrash that we don't have either. And he says as follows, V'tertzu, it's on the second line of source 3. Kiksha'ala Moshe l'marom l'kabel Torah. Now the reason I gave that whole long introduction is because what do you mean, Allah Moshe l'marom? When you read the Torah, it says Moshe went up to Har Sinai and God gave him the Torah. It doesn't say anything about going into heaven. And it says, when Moshe went up into the heavens to get the Torah, Heru'lo akol davar v'davar memtet panim l'isur, memtet panim l'heter. So they showed him, and the numbers here are symbolic, for every possible question, 49 arguments to leniency and 49 arguments to stringency. In other words, any potential question that came up had all sorts of different ways to resolve it based on principles and precedents, and it could come out positive, it could come out stringent, however you want to call it. And Moshe asked God, so no, what's the, like we said, like the middle school said, who's right? And God's answer was, it's up to the Beit Din. Meaning, the Beit Din has all this information. The Beit Din weighs it all out. And whichever they find to be the more compelling side, that's how they'll vote. And that's the halacha. So the Ritva then says, there's more to this that I'm not going to tell you because it's mystical. But this is Lefi HaDrash, this is accurate. All right, so certainly not within the pshat of how halakha works or the pshat of how divinity works, this is how he's explaining this odd gemara, which means elu v'elu divrei Elohim chayim, means Beit Shammai is plugged into divine truth and is weighing things out and is finding one piece of divine truth to be more compelling than another and saying mutar, and Beit Hillel is doing the same thing with the same information coming out and saying Asur. And that's not all that strange. We understand that there are very intelligent people who are spiritually endowed and look at the same information, and because of the way that their mind works and the way that they weigh different kinds of evidence, they'll come up with different responses. But it doesn't make the other guy wrong. It just means we're not accepting that halakha. So that's how the Ritva answers that problem. Right? Then in the Gemara itself, and this is the last thing we did last week, the Gemara says, so if Elu Ve'elu Divrei Chayim, then why do we pass like Beit Hillel? And you would think that the Gemara would then answer because Beit Hillel had a higher average SAT score, right? Or ACT, or perhaps IQ. In other words, you would think maybe it's because the members of Beit Hillel were more brilliant. That's not the answer the Gemara gives. The answer the Gemara gives is that because Beit Hillel were modest, were more tolerant, seemingly, and when they publicly taught, they taught not only their own words, they taught Beit Shammai's words, and even put Beit Shammai's words first. Okay. And they bring a proof from that from a Mishnah in Sukkah that's going to be really the pivot around which everything here is going to turn, because I think I've been mulling this over for a couple of weeks, and I really think this Mishnah holds the key to everything that we're going to look at. But we have a big problem here. So, we have a statement in a Tosefta, which on the back. If you take a look for 1 minute in source 9, paragraph Yud Gimel. Remember, we said that there was a divine voice came out and said, and they're both Divrei Elohim Chayim, but Halacha Beit Hillel. Halacha Beit Hillel means that's what you got to do. That's what you got to do. If you look in paragraph Yud Gimel, it says, Le'olam Halacha Kedivrei Beit Hillel. Halacha follows Beit Hillel. harotzeh lachmir al atzmo kinhok kidivrei beit shamayim kidivrei beit hillel al zenemar ksil b'choshech yilech. If somebody wants to do all the chumrot, I mean, he's always take the stringent position, he's called a fool walking in darkness. Hatofes kulei beit shamayim kulei beit hillel, if he always takes the lenient position, then rasha, we don't need a pasuk for that, he's just a wicked person. If you want to follow Beit Shammai, you got to follow Beit Shammai consistently, meaning their leniencies and their stringencies. That, but notice what we just said. The opening line of this thing was halacha kebeit hillel, and then it went on to say, if you're going to always take the lenient side or always take the stringent side, then we have this bad value judgment about you. But if you want to take Beit Shammai and do all of Beit Shammai, that's fine, as long as you're consistent. What happened to halacha kebeit hillel? As if you look back on in source form, you'll see this interesting comment in the Gemara Chulin. Said Hagufa Kasham Arli Olam Halacha Kedivrei Beit Hillel. According to the Tosefta, said you said the halacha follows Beit Hillel. V'hanar Tani wrote Tzelas Ol Kedivrei Shammai Yaseh. If you want to do like Beit Shammai, you could do it. Just be consistent. So Lo Kasha Kanim Kodem Bat Kol Kan Lachar Bat Kol. So the way they answer it is that it was before or after that Bat Kol. In other words, that there was a period during which Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel were disagreeing. And during that period, while the disagreement still raged, the position was, you can be a Beit Shammai guy or you can be a Beit Hillel guy, which, by the way, our assumption is that those represent the entirety of halachic decision-making at the time. There was no third school. Beit Shammai and Hillel is everybody. So you could do Beit Shammai consistently, you could do Beit Hillel consistently, and you're fine. Once the Bat Kol came out and said, Halacha kebeit hillel, finito. Right? Which, by the way, would then help us a little bit in Source 1. Because remember, in Source 1 we said Rabbi Yossi bemoans the fact that today there's two schools, the two Torot. So he could be referring to that period before the Bat Kol came out, where you could be a Beit Shammai guy or a Beit Hillel guy. The problem is, of course, timing. Because Rabbi Yossi is way after all of this. Rabbi Yossi is way after the Bat Kol. All right? Right, David.
I have another problem. We don't follow Bat Kol.
That's answer number two. All right, which is Vibaite Maaflachar Bat Kol. You could say that this statement is after the Bat Kol, which historically it's gotta be. Rabbi Yeshua Hidamar in Mashkichem Bat Kol. So Rabbi Yeshua, according to David, says we do not listen to a Bat Kol. Where do we know Rabbi Yeshua says we don't listen to a Bat Kol? From the most famous story the rabbis tell about themselves, which we studied here, which is Tanur Shalachnoi. When Rabbi Eliezer says the tree will prove my point, the stream will prove my point. And the Bat Kol comes out and says, Halacha Rav Eliezer. And Rabbi Yehoshua says, no. Basically, like, thank you very much, but you're not invited. And so it could be Rabbi Yeshua's position that says the Bat Kol is meaningless, which means we're now going to turn around and say, Halacha Kebeit Hillel is not to be taken as a directive, but to say something almost like an example. Either Halacha Kebeit Hillel or Halacha Beit Shammai, you be one or the other. And we'll see several sources that have this option for being one or the other, extend way later than we would think in history, right? In actually a famous piece. But here's the piece that I really want to look at, because if you think about it, it's so inherently problematic. I want to look at the Mishnah in source 4 or 5, and the Mishnah in source 6, and then we'll see how it all comes together in source 7. We're going to go back to source 6 because that's the real. Source 5 to take that apart. Number one, Mishai Rosho V'Rubo B'Sukkah. So you're sitting in a sukkah. For right now, we're going to assume it's a nicely sized sukkah, that the size is not the problem. And V'Shulchano B'Toch HaBayit. Now, most sukkot, many sukkot that I've seen, many sukkot, maybe your own sukkot, are attached to the house, such that you could be sitting in the house and be talking to somebody on the other side of the table in the sukkah. So we're picturing somebody who's sitting in the sukkah, and his table is in the house. So maybe he's eating under the sukkah, but the table's in the house. Beit Shammai poslin v'til machshirin. And the Gemara later deals with the words poslin machshirin. Actually, what they mean, Beit Shammai, there's two different machlokot going on, and Beit Shammai, in this particular regard, says that you do not perform the mitzvah of sukkah if you're sitting in a sukkah, but the table you're eating off of is in the house. And Beit Hillel say you do. Okay. Now, amrulahan Beit Hillel leveit Shammai. So Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, this is rare, because usually in Mishnah, we get two opinions, but we don't get a discussion about them. We get the opinions. Here we get the discussion. Beit Hillel turns to Beit Shammai and says, Lo kach haya ma'aseh, don't we all know that famous story? Shalchu ziknei Beit Shammai v'ziknei Beit Hillel. Who's that? Who's Zignei Beit Shammai and Zignei Beit Hillel? So the generation before us of students, right? To Levaker Rabbi Yochanan ben Hachorani. Rabbi Yochanan ben Hachorani, parenthetically, was actually a student of Beit Shammai, which makes this whole story really bizarre. They went to visit him, and evidently they were visiting him on Sukkot. They came to a sukkah and they saw him sitting there eating in the sukkah while his table was in the house. Right? And velo amrulo davar. They didn't say anything to him. Now, what does they didn't say anything to them imply? That they felt it was valid. So what's Beit Hillel say to Beit Shammai? But who whose position was it?
Shammai.
It was everybody's position beforehand that it was valid. In other words, we're not saying that we disagree with your position. We're saying that you did not properly study the previous generation of Beit Shammai's position. Which, by the way, remember what Yossi said? Lo shimshu kol tzarkan. They didn't properly study. So the challenge of Beit Hillel Beit Shammai here isn't we disagree with you on point. It's that you got the story wrong. Right? Watch this. Amrulo hem Beit Shammai. Misham raya. So Beit Shammai says, you're going to bring a proof from there? Afhem amrulo im kein hayita noheglo kiyamta mitzvat sukam yamecha. You got it wrong. In the story, they actually did say something. So you know what they said to him? If this is what you've been doing, you've never filled the mitzvah of sukkah. Now, Chanita gives me a look, which I sympathize with, which, forget about the halakha for a minute. That's how you're going to talk to somebody? Right? I think there's something very deep there to that.
Wait, which, so part, take a look story. Which part of the Torah? What they said, what they might have said? Or
What Beit Shammai said they did say. Beit Shammai says, you got the story wrong. You know what happened? They walked in. They saw Yochanan sitting in this questionable fashion. And what they said to him was, who's they? They all said to him, if this is what you've been doing, you've never fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah. So in other words, what are Beit Shammai and Hillel really disagreeing about in the second generation? What everybody agreed on in the first generation. Right? All right.
And which party was Rabbi Yochanan in?
Rabbi Yochanan HaChorani was evidently a student of Beit Shammai. Okay. From other evidence we have from some other halachot of Taharot. Next Mishnah. Right? What does Torah say about Kriyat Shema? When do you say Kriyat Shema? What does the Torah say? What are the words of the Torah?
When you get up.
B'shach b'chal kumacha, right? What does that mean?
Good question.
What does that mean? So, I mean, at the time that you would go to lie down, or as you're lying down? Machloket b'chal Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai means by erev kol adam yatu v'yikru. Beit Shammai says every night you got to lie down and say Kriyat Shema. In the morning, you have to stand up and say Kriyat Shema. Shneimar uv'shoch b'chalv kumecha. Right? V'tilomim kol adam korei kadarko. Read however you want. Standing, sitting, reclining, it's all good. Shneimar uv'lechtecha v'derech. Right? Im kein laman amar v'shoch b'chalv kumecha. So Beit Hillel has to defend. Why does it say v'shoch b'chalv kumecha? Not to tell you how, but to tell you when. It's a time that people are going to sleep and a time people are getting up. Those are the time frames, but be doesn't mean while, but rather at the time of. Okay, good. Here we have a story. Amar Ritarfon. Ani hayiti b'derech. I was walking. V'hiteiti likrot kedei b'et Shammai. Evidently it was evening time, and I was walking. So I laid down on the side of the road to say Kriyat Shema. And I got in trouble. I almost got killed by armed robbers. They see a guy lying by the side of the road. I'm quite vulnerable. I'm Rulo. So by the way, where did he tell this? He came into the Beit Midrash. And he said, you know, I almost got killed. Well, why'd you get killed? I was lying. Why were you lying down on the road? It was my time for Kriyat Shema. And I wanted to do Beit Shammai's approach. I'm Rulo. You deserve to die. Because you violated Beit Hillel's words. Which, of course, is bizarre, because what did Beit Hillel say? You say Kriyat Shema how? However you want, including lying down. So, yeah, if you were lying down and said Kriyat Shema Mela, but if you're walking and then you go to lie down, it means that you're trying to say, we rule like Beit Shammai. It's like you're making a statement with that. All right, good. So we'll see how this all plays out. So we have this Gemara in Brachot that puts all three of these things together. Tani Ravi Chezkel. Asa k'divrei Beit Shammai asa, k'divrei Beit Hillel asa. Take your choice, Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, up to you. Rav Yosef amar asa k'divrei Beit Shammai lo asa v'lo klum. Rav Yosef says, no, if you follow Beit Shammai, you haven't done anything. Now, does that mean that's the halacha? Or does that mean that whichever one of the two we've ruled like, the other one is out? There's no more options. What's his proof? That none. And he quotes the story from Sukkah. Because what was their response? If that's how you're sitting in the Sukkah, you're not Yotze. Not, that's another legitimate way to do it, but rather you're not Yotze. And then, Rav Nachum Yitzhak Amar, Asak Rebbe Shammai Chayav Mita. Now, this is clearly not meant literally, but if you follow Beit Shammai, you deserve to die. By the way, what would that be couched in actual real death penalty, would be in the law of the Zaken Mamre, which is the rebellious elder, a member of the Beit Din HaGadol, who has his own position, who gets voted down, that's all good, and then goes back to his town and tells people to still be doing the way he ruled. It's Chayav Mita, for obvious reasons. Totally destroys the system. So they're couching that, this and that, and who, what do they quote? What does Menachem Yitzchak quote to prove that? He said, because Rabbi Tarfon. What did they say to Rabbi Tarfon? You deserve to die because you followed, you went against Beit Hillel. A lot of strange stuff going on. So I want to end this part two, because next week's going to be part three. We're going to bring this to a close by showing you two sources that jam up against each other. The first one is source 8 on the back. And then something that's just going to... I have no words to describe how crazy this is. Okay. At the end of the first parak of Masachet Yevamot, we have the following scenario. Remember that the norm that all of Masachet Yevamot is built on is a man who does not have any kids, has brothers, and dies. And that's a Yibum. But the setting for almost all of Masachet Yevamot is that the man has multiple wives. And that leads us to the whole issue of Yibum with one then exempts the rest. They don't need chalitza, they're free to go, etc. And then the problem that the whole first parak is revolves around is what happens if the man's wife is asur to his brother for another reason. Classic example, Reuven and Shimon are brothers. Reuven married Shimon's daughter. Totally legit. Totally legit. Right? It's very common in the ancient world. Reuven dies without kids. Shimon's now supposed to do Yibum on his own daughter. He can't for obvious reasons. It's a huge prohibition. And so therefore, there's no chalitza, there's no Yibum, she's free to go. What about the other wives? So Beit Hillel says, they're also free to go. Beit Shammai says, no, they're not. Here we go. Beit Shammai matiroin hatzarot l'achim. Beit Shammai says the co-wives could marry one of the brothers. Beit Hillel serim. So now, what happens if you give chalitza to a woman who you don't have a connection with? Does it mean anything? It means nothing. Go up to a woman on the street and do chalitza. It doesn't mean anything. Is her status changed as a result? No, she just thinks you're nuts. Right? And a little less saliva, whatever. Right? But that's it. So what happens if you do chalitza to a woman who doesn't need chalitza? Nothing. By the way, is a widow allowed to marry Cohen? A widow. Marry Cohen? Sure. But a chalutza can't. So a man's married to a woman, he dies without kids, and she gets chalitza, she can't marry Cohen. But let's say she didn't need chalitza. She could marry Cohen. Right? What if he gave her chalitza anyways, even though she didn't need it? It's nothing, it's meaningless. She can still marry Cohen. So here we go. Beit Shammai matir natzor l'achim v'telo osrim chaltzu Beit Shammai poslim nakuna telo makshirim. And by the way, if this co-wife does do Yibum, according to Beit Hillel, we've got a big problem. Because she just married her husband's brother without Yibum. And according to Beit Shammai, it was fine. This is a zero, so there's no win here. There's no way you can act on this that's going to cover all bases. You have to rule Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai. You can't say, let's do them both. Lie down for Kriyat Shema. You can't do them both. All right, so here's the kicker. Afo pin she'elu osrin ve'elu matirin. So even though Beit Shammai and Hillel have opposite positions, Eilu poslin ve'eilu machshirin lo nimnu'u Beit Shammai milisan Hashim Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai's students had no problem marrying daughters of Beit Hillel. Ve'lo Beit Hillel mi Beit Shammai, and vice versa. They married into, which, by the way, is huge if you think about it. Call atarot atumot shayu elu matarin ve'elu matamin lo nimnu'u osin tarot elu agaveilu. And those situations where Beit Shammai said this is tahor and Beit Hillel said it's tameh, or vice versa, they still did their tarot together. Now, how do they do that? So the Gemara goes into how they would deal with the technical issue. But what's the point of this? So you take a look at the Tosefta right underneath in paragraph Yod, and there's an addition. Nahagu ha'emet v'hashalom b'neihem. They found a blend between emet, sticking your principles, and shalom, getting along. And they found a way to be harmonious. Beautiful. It's this gorgeous image. Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, principle disagreements, and yet they found a way to somehow live harmoniously. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. And yet, it kind of goes against the first source we saw today, which is for 3 years they were fighting, halacha like who? Which is it? Okay. So, take a look at below the thing. We're going to go take a look at all this stuff next week again, but just have to see it, introduce it. The Mishnah Shabbat in the first parak tells a little story that Beit Shammai was trying to legislate certain things that essentially had to do with distancing yourself from the non-Jews at the time of the Roman conquest before the Korban. And they went up to a particular attic where they'd been hiding out and studying, and they found that there were more Beit Shammai than Beit Hillel, and they quickly rushed and did a vote and passed 18 decrees. Right? So we get another story here, and source 13. Yidach abotzer lagad. How many times did Shammai and Hillel actually disagree? Shammai and Hillel. So we have three famous disagreements, in which, by the way, halacha follows neither of them in every case. And then there's a fourth one here. Habotzer lagat. If you're harvesting grapes to go straight to the winery, are they mukshar l'tumah? Are they able to be mekabel tumah? Shammai omer huchshar, Hillel omer lo huchshar. Good. Amar lo Hillel Shammai, neima botzrim b'tahara. So Hillel said, why would you have to be tahor to collect grapes? It's a detailed thing about tahara. Vein moskin b'tahara, but we don't care about how you pick olives. B'tahara. When Takatani goes on to follow Misika. So Shammai says, according to this, if you bug me, I'm going to make a rule that there's tuma for olives too. Don't push it. Na'atzu cherv Beit HaMidrash. They put down a sword in the Beit HaMidrash. Now, what that typically means in rabbinic language is they put a block up. Nobody can come in. Kind of like closed session, maybe. Amru nechlatz yikanez v'yitzay. They say nobody can leave. Oto ayom hayach Hillel kafuf yoshev v'nei Shammai kecha min ha'talmidim. Hillel was sitting there in front of Shammai like one of the students. He was lowered, as it's saying, position. Kasheli Yisrael kiyom shenasabo ha'egel. It was as difficult for Am Yisrael like the day the eagle was created. What is that about? So the Yerushalmi broadens the story. It is wild. Tana Rabbi Yeshua Unya. So a particular student, Rabbi Yeshua Unya, says, Talmidei Beit Shammai amdu lahen milamata. The Beit Shammai's were in the lower part of this house. Vayu horgin b'talmidei Beit Hillel. They were actually killing. That sword was not put in the ground. They were actually killing talmidei Beit Hillel. Right? And Tani Shishalu mehan alu v'ashar amdu alehan b'charvotu v'machim. And there's a later tradition that we find in Hilchot Eretz Yisrael min Agniza that there was a fast day established on either the 4th or the 9th of Adar because of the massacre of Beit Hillel Beit Shammai in this civil war that they had, which actually in one of the versions says 28,000 students were killed. Now, clearly that's way exaggerated, but the entire story is hugely difficult because put it all aside as being exaggeration and hyperbole and there's no swords and nobody dies. Let's just assume for a minute. Nonetheless, what's clearly coming out of here is a very antagonistic relationship, which actually goes all the way back to the Gemara in Eruvin, where we say, halacha follows us, halacha follows you, and going to a rabbi and saying, if this is what you've been doing, sukkah, you've never fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah, which is claiming a monopoly on the halacha, as opposed to what Yevamot seems to say, of there was some way for them to say, this is my position, that's your position, we can still marry each other's kids. We can still do tumah v'tahara together. So how do we resolve that? That's what we got to see next week. Mm-hmm.